Welcome to episode 3, and today we're talking about transport. Joining me to discuss it is Tammy Shepherd, CEO of Tail and Bed Community Centre. Hi Tammy, thanks for coming along today. What I want to know first is, how does transport work in relation to our region?
So we're funded by two levels of government, but then we've got a third government department that pays to run the Coorong Coaches medical bus from Keith to Adelaide Monday to Friday. So Department of Health funds people over the age of 65, and all referrals must come through My Aged Care. And Department of Human Services fund under 65. So we cover 35,000 square kilometres, six local government regions. So for that, the medical bus is our primary transport option because the cost is significantly cheaper to the consumer. So we'll always recommend that people go on the bus if they're on that main route from Keith to Adelaide. And the most important thing to stress about a community passenger network, it is a door-to-door service. So we will pick you up from your home, take you where you need to go, and return you to your home. There's no bus stops or meeting points. It's door-to-door. So if we put people on the medical bus, it'll pick people up in the Murray Bridge region as well, and anyone on that main route from Keith to Adelaide through, take them to their appointments and return them home. But their appointment must be between 11 a.m. and 2 p.m. because the coordination, we can have up to 9 people on the bus, the driver can't be on the road for extended periods of time. We have to meet the legislation around that as well. So that's why the appointments need to be between 11 and 2. We do all the coordination of that to ensure that we get everyone where they need to go. If the person, and it's also wheelchair accessible as well, the bus, but if people can't use the bus for whatever reason, if their appointment can't be negotiated for between 11 or 2, or they're not on the main route, or some psychosocial issues are unable to get on the bus, we have a community passenger network as well. And we have volunteer drivers and a fleet of vehicles. And our volunteer drivers will pick you up from your home, take you to your appointment, and then return you back home. Our primary booking is for medical, because we don't have an unlimited resource pool, so our focus is medical. We can do social trips, providing we've got a vehicle available and drivers to drive, but we will always put a medical appointment as a priority over a social trip. The drivers, we've got vehicles, one based at Meningie, one at Lamoureux. We've ordered one for Murray Bridge, and unfortunately with the vehicle shortages, that still hasn't arrived. That we ordered that November last year, and it's still not here. So we've ordered 2 new vehicles, which will take us up to a fleet of 8. We want to spread those vehicles across the 6 local government areas to run an effective transport service to try to cover as many of the gaps as there are possible. We're also governed by our contracts that, for the medical bus, we cover all 6 local governments. So that's Tatiara, Rural City of Murray Bridge, Coorong, Corindera East Murray, Southern Mallee and Mid Murray councils. But the passenger network, we're only funded for Corindera, Coorong and Southern Mallee. So we have to refer to other passenger networks in other regions, and that can get a little complicated, specifically for our consumers, because it's confusing. We've got an aged care planning region that we service for people over 65. We've got a state map that we use for under 65. And then we've got various passenger networks that cover certain local government areas. And that can get a little confusing. So my recommendation is to ring our organisation. We can talk people through that and work out what is the best option for people in the community for transport. But I think the most important thing we want people to know is there are quite a few transport options in the region, and it's knowing about them. How can we effectively promote that more so that people know about it? So in Murray Bridge specifically, you've got 4 transport options. So you've got Rural City of Murray Bridge, you've got our service obviously, you've got the Australian Red Cross, and you've also got Murrundi Aboriginal Community Controlled Health Service that provides some transport options as well. So it pays to contact us, we can talk you through where your trip is going, what your eligibility criteria is, and what organisation is going to be best suited to meet your needs for that trip.
So how does the funding work?
The funding, so we're funded by the Department of Health to subsidise the service, and Department of Human Services. So there is a fee for service, and that's in our contracts that we have to charge people a client contribution. We have to have a fee policy, and that's on our website so that people can have a look at that and understand before they contact our organisation what the potential will be for the cost of services. And we can negotiate that as well, because the funding states that we can't refuse a service due to a client's incapacity to pay. And so we can negotiate that with people as well. Obviously, we're a not-for-profit at the Tullamarine Community Centre, so if people are requiring ongoing transport and they don't have the capacity to pay, we've only got limited funds on that. So we have to run it as a business to a degree where we need to cover our costs. So certain circumstances, we can negotiate that as well. We can also tap into other organisations to get some contributions to try to support people if they are disadvantaged or unable to pay.
Yeah. Are you the only people in the region that do the long distance travel aid?
No. So Red Cross will do the long distance. Murrindy will also do. So when you say long distance, you're referring to Adelaide?
Yes.
So yeah, Red Cross and Murrindy will both do trips to Adelaide. So the Murray Bridge Council one only goes as far as Mount Barker Stirling, but the three other services will go further distance than that by negotiation.
So what do you think the issues are with the transport as it is at the moment?
One of the greatest issues is always going to be the large geographical area we cover. It's 35,000 square kilometres. So logistically, it wouldn't matter how many vehicles we owned, we wouldn't be able to cover every gap within the region. But what we're good at is we're well networked, we're well resourced around. If we can't provide the services, what other services can we tap into? Yeah, so one of the most unique things we have is a memorandum of understanding with Country Health, where we can access any health vehicle at the hospitals in the local governments that we serve. So as long as we've got volunteer base, and we're always looking for new volunteers, then we can access fleet vehicles, because it wouldn't matter how many we owned, we wouldn't have enough to cover.
Yeah. So with the funding you've got until June 2024, what do you think the problems are in the region?
The biggest problem in the region is the anomaly of boundaries, because for the over 65s, our organisation covers the aged care planning region. So we cover the Murray Mallee, Adelaide Hills, I won't say we cover, but we could cover under that aged care planning map, the Murray Mallee, the Adelaide Hills, the Fleurieu, Kangaroo Island. Like, it's a massive area. But for under 65s, it's a separate map. The state map, we cover the Riverland, Berry, Renmark. So when you look at the geographic areas of what we've funded to cover, as a consumer, when you ring our organisation, if you're over 65 and you come in this map, theoretically, if we have the capacity to pay, yes, we should service people in that region. But if you're under 65, we service you in this region. So as a consumer, that just must be so confusing, because it's confusing to us. Mm. Historically, the community passenger networks have only serviced the local government region that they are in, because a lot of the time the councils contribute money to the scheme, and so your local government boundaries governed your service delivery area. What we're seeing now with the new contracts that are rolling out for independent organisations like us, and there are 16 passenger networks in South Australia, three of them are independent: Red Cross, York Peninsula, or Community Care and Transport, and the Tullamarine Community Centre, Murray Mallee Community Passenger Network. The rest of them have local government component to it, where the councils contribute money to them. But then the councils govern that they can only service that local government region because they're contributing money to it, and it's ratepayer money used. Whereas if you look at that, that I believe is what creates some of the gaps throughout South Australia, where if you've got somebody on a border, and let's use, and it happens in a few locations throughout South Australia, but let's use Morgan Truro. It's right on the border of Mid-Murray and Barossa. Logistically, would Barossa be better to transport somebody from that area for, you know, it could be a 10, 20 kilometre variation in the distance. But because the local governments govern the boundaries, they won't provide services outside their local government region. So then it's just, how could we streamline all of the passenger networks throughout South Australia to work more cohesively together?
Isn't it just about communication and flexibility?
It is, but I also appreciate that if councils, and some councils are contributing quite a lot of money to these transport services. So I fully appreciate that the councils have an obligation to only spend their ratepayers' money within their local government boundaries. I fully appreciate that. So how can we gain some flexibility in that when you logistically look at the geographical areas that are covered throughout South Australia, and how could we come up with a model that has that flexibility without, you know, expending ratepayers' money? Could it be a partnership between neighbouring councils, or, you know, a sum of money that is there for that? You know, I don't have the solution to that. Certainly back in 2019, I did do a lot of work and looked at a business model around changing those the boundary locations for the state. But again, I think it comes back to, until the Department of Health, Department of Human Services and the Department of Transport get to a position of all getting together to review these contracts that are, you know, more than 20 years old, and having a really good understanding of how passenger networks work, which is really difficult because they all run slightly different. Not all passenger networks have a bus that they run. They're all very, very different. And so until I think we got a unified model, I think it's going to be very challenging to overcome where some of those barriers are.
How is it going to change in 2024?
I don't think it is, because there is no appetite for the three departments to get together. I don't think there's an appetite to change. So I think from state government, there has been a commitment. We've met with Tom Kustantostis, his advisors. He was unavailable the day we booked a meeting, and they are looking into it as well, but I don't think that the appetite was there really to delve into this. Department for Transport used to manage the contracts of all the passenger networks in South Australia, and by all accounts, it ran very well under their management. So should it go back there? When you look at how closely aligned we are to public transport, should it all be administered by DIT?
Yeah. So it, for the smaller services, because the rural city and Murray Bridge does a lot of transport, but it's quite a small service. Mm-hmm. And they're all volunteers. So you run a service similar to that with
Correct.
Volunteers, as well as your passenger service. And they're funded separately?
Yes. The medical bus is funded by the Department for Transport, and we broker the appointments for it.
Yeah. Mm. So for those over 65s, they're small, they're going to the doctors, or they're going to the... So, and that's funded through CHSP. But if they've got a client who wants to go to Adelaide, they have to call you. So how does the funding move around?
It doesn't. The client just pays us direct. For us, one of our greatest services is from Berry to Pinneroo-Lamoureux to Berry. We got cars almost daily heading across to there, which is impacted at the moment by the floods because the roads are closed. We're having to go via the Mildura Road, which is adding an extra 50 kilometres to our trip, and that, you know, all costs more money. So that service is running at a significant loss at the moment, which, you know, is out of our control.
How do you, if you feel that it's not going to change?
I'm hopeful that it will change. I'm not sure how to get the people that need to make the change in a room. And through my involvement with SACTA, this is what I keep asking for, is let's get a round table together. Let's get a couple of community passenger network operators, because CHSP transport and community passenger network transport are very different, although very similar. But let's get some CHSP transport, some local government transport providers. Let's get some community passenger network providers, specifically some regional providers, because regional is very different to metro. But let's get us all in a room and round table. Let's workshop this, because the passenger network providers are very intelligent people, and they're all very aware of how their patch could be improved. So let's workshop that, get it all down on paper and look at what is going to be the best way moving forward.
So for you particularly, what do you think would be the best way?
A lot of the challenges came into play when the Commonwealth went out to the consumer-directed model, where we as providers stopped working together. We become competitive. We're all competing for the consumer dollar. Now, as a not-for-profit, that's not our core business. We are a community service. We will adapt, modify, we're resilient, we're responsive, we will respond to community need. So it's not about making, you know, money. It's about what's in the best interest of the consumer. And I think we've lost some of that, unfortunately, where if people are on a package, then certain providers are doing all of the transport in-house, even if it's less cost-effective to the consumer. They're not referring to services that potentially could provide that cheaper. So we've looked at models in other states around, with the NDIS, with the Commonwealth Home Support Program, how can we share that transport resource more effectively so that we've got less organisations owning fleet that a lot of the time is sitting in a car park unused? How can we create a one-stop shop within a region, one point of contact, and that one point of contact will refer out, but rather than having one vehicle going through to Adelaide, that one vehicle could be going through to Adelaide with a drop-off at Mount Barker and a drop-off at Stirling and et cetera. So I know that the medical bus model doesn't always work because it's a long day, and the more people you have on the bus, the more coordination and the longer you're on the bus for. But if we had more fleet that was being better utilised between service providers, it would be more cost effective and you know, better for the consumer and more sustainable for providers. But there has to be an appetite to do that. There has to be a willingness to genuinely partner with other organisations. And sadly, so I've been in the game for 10 years, sadly, since 2015, we've rapidly seen that partnership and that genuine collective impact, that genuine collaboration, it's diminished.
Mm. So really, don't you think that the potential changes are supposed to reduce that competition, which will then be able to increase collaboration?
I'm hopeful of that.
Yeah. Because that would be the ideal, wouldn't it? If you get in, because if you get in a thin market grant, then that leaves a collaboration, because you're all getting the same grant. Or maybe it doesn't if you're competing for passengers then.
Mm. I guess the biggest thing that needs to be considered in this new model is currently an output, a transport output, is one output per one-way trip, regardless of kilometres travelled. So for us, in a regional, rural, remote locations, we're severely disadvantaged, because one output from Burnside to the city, 7 kilometres one way, versus Pinneroo to Adelaide, 300 kilometres, there's no fairness and equity in that. And there's no sustainability in that. Like, as a not-for-profit or any business person would not open a business being told, we're going to give you $25, $36 maximum for a one-way trip, and you're going to do 300 kilometres with the current fuel prices. No one would entertain that, let alone a not-for-profit. And so there really needs to be a lot of time spent on an output for the Commonwealth specifically, because it has to be fair and equitable, and it has to be manageable. Because my fear is that when we see, and we are seeing it across other states, where organisations are pulling out of these services. Last I heard, it was around 50 to 60%. People were withdrawing from the service. When I look at the 35,000 kilometres that we serve, if we were to pull out of that, then that's a massive hole to fix. And I'm very passionate about local providers. There is a it is about trust. It is about relationships in rural communities. And if you've got a big NGO based out of Adelaide delivering to a 35,000 square kilometre, people are being disadvantaged because there aren't local resources, and where there are local resources, it's often very difficult to find them or to tap into them, because a lot of rural remote locations, small businesses don't have websites, they don't have media marketing resources. It is word of mouth. You know, is there a local gardener? Is there, what services are out there? What transport options are there for people? That it is all about word of mouth. Yeah, and I think we do that very well as an organisation, because we can't afford to lose transport options in the region. It is still the most requested, the most demanded service. When any of our local politicians go out to community consultation, the number one issue is transport.
So is the government looking at this?
I know the government are looking at options to fix this, and as they should be. But I know there's been some discussions with Uber around an Uber health model. Now, that really alarms me, because when you look at what is required of us, specifically for people over the age of 65, we have to have an assessment form, we've got to have a My Aged Care referral number, we've got to have a case management plan, we've got to establish goals for the consumer, and we've got to report on the goals in our restorative reablement reports. The administration behind a one-way trip is extensive. Now, if you looked at Uber Health doing that, I don't know administratively how that can be managed. So whilst I think the government focus is on a resolution, I think we need to start by looking at what we've got, because we already have a transport model in place. How can that current model be streamlined to work more effectively for a greater capacity within rural communities to work more effectively before we go looking at bringing other players into the mix? Because the more people you add to the mix, then the more convoluted it gets for the consumers, the more confusing. Like if you look at even now, if you want transport within Murray Bridge, you ring us, we're going to try to put you on the bus in the first instance. If we can't get you on the bus, we're going to refer you to Red Cross. If Red Cross don't have the capacity to pay, you're going to come back to us. So from a consumer perspective, I certainly can understand how that would be frustrating. So let's not add players to the mix.
But don't you think it's about, because part of this thing is about, they're talking about it being an open market. They're going to deregulate those things that they think are on the lower scale of care, which transport could be one of them. We don't know. They weren't specific. And if transport is one of them, they will deregulate it so that Uber Health won't have to jump through all the hoops that you have to. And for some consumers, going an Uber is very easy, and that's how they do it. They go on the app, they get the Uber will do it, click, 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 however the funding exchange is going to happen. So ultimately the consumer might not be as safe, but they might find it easy.
I would hope that that's the case. But when you look at this model is following the NDIS. Now let's just remotely delve into how well the NDIS is working. We've got people that are ringing taxis, ringing Ubers in a wheelchair, and they get told their appointment's at 11 o'clock. They'll get told, well, sorry, we don't have a taxi or an Uber available at that time, so we're going to pick you up at 9 o'clock and you'll be there 2 hours early, and we won't be able to pick you up for 2 hours after your appointment. So that person potentially is then in limbo for 4 hours of the day, if often the taxi doesn't ever really return to pick them up, and so they're left stranded. And so again, passenger networks are a door-to-door service. It is a personal service. And what we see, Mrs. Jones will go to Adelaide, gets a terrible diagnosis of requiring oncology for the next 10 weeks. She's got to go 3 appointments a week for the next 10 weeks. 9 times out of 10, our volunteer driver will say, I'll do every one of them. And that relationship is built where we know we can pick Mrs. Jones up from her door, we can take her to her appointment, and we can return her home. She's safe, she's sound, she's got that compassionate person with the empathy that's hearing her story on the way back, all in confidentially. But that relationship is built there and that trust is there. And so I know if it was for my mum, I know which service I would prefer. Would I put her in a taxi with no guarantees that someone's actually, or an Uber, with no guarantees that someone's going to pick her up at the end? Or would I put her in a passenger network where I get a reassurance that that driver is going to wait in the car park for her appointment, regardless of how long it takes, and return her back home again and have that personal trusted experience?
I totally agree with you. And somebody who's working for the community, from the community.
Yeah.
I think that is one of the, because all the volunteers live in the community.
They do.
Yeah.
And what I think is completely underrated in this whole community passenger network model is the benefit to the volunteers. How many people, retired farmers, retired professional people, they don't necessarily want to go on a committee and they don't want to commit to going to a meeting once a month and having bookwork and paperwork and obligations. Whereas our passenger network, we have a pool of drivers. We send an email out to all of them saying, Mrs. Jones needs to go to the Royal Adelaide Hospital on Thursday at 11 o'clock. Who would like to do the trip? And they choose whether they want to volunteer. There's no roster. There's no obligation. It is a choice about whether they want to do the trip or not. And I tell you what, 99% of trips are filled. Very rarely do we get someone or get a position where nobody puts their hand up to do one of those trips. And it's all about choice. It's the volunteer's choice and control about how little or how much they do within the community. And 99% of people, as long as they've got a driver's license, they're more than happy to drive. Mm. Another benefit, we've got people Pinneroo-Lamoury. If somebody's got an appointment, maybe it's a couple of hours in the city, they can go and do whatever they want for a couple of hours in the city, run errands, follow up on what they want. They get to use our vehicle while they're down there doing their trips, and then they go back home again. So there's a benefit to the volunteer for participating. It's a beautiful model. Why are we not doing more of that? South Australia is superior when it comes to volunteering. If you look at the national stats of volunteering, we're ahead of the game. Our state wants to contribute. Let's empower them. Let's let them contribute back to their community and fill their own cups of giving back and improving their well-being, as well as helping people in the community.
What a fantastic way to end. Thank you. That was great.
All right.